You're listening to Nitty Gritty Nursing with Nurse M, where she breaks down the nitty gritty basics of nursing concepts. Hello and welcome to Nitty Gritty Nursing with Nurse M. In today's episode, I'm going to talk about acute kidney injuries and basically what you can expect from a nursing perspective of what you might see in your patients and how we would go about treating them. But before we do that, there's some basic information about kidneys that just needs to be covered so that everyone's on the same page. The reality is that with the kidneys that we have, adults should be voiding somewhere between the range of 1 to 2 liters a day. And the urine that is coming out consists essentially of what our bodies don't need, like excess water, ions, specifically ions that are sodium, calcium, chloride, bicarbonate, potassium, phosphate, etc. Those ions are regulated through the kidneys, creatinine, and urea. And the labs really to consider are blood urea nitrogen, which is abbreviated as BUN, creatinine, and GFR. Those three things are primary lab values used to assess kidney function. But specifically, creatinine is acute kidney injury specific. Urea is a waste product from protein breakdown in the liver, and it's filtered out by the kidneys. So if the kidneys don't work properly, you end up with a high BUN or blood urea nitrogen because we are not getting rid of the urea. Creatinine is even more specific to the kidney because as a waste product of muscle breakdown, it is measured a lot when renal failure is suspected because they'll take the creatinine level and the GFR, BUN, and clearance to determine how well the kidneys are filtering waste from the body. Creatinine is solely filtered from the blood via the glomerulus and not reabsorbed or secreted in the nephron. Let me repeat that. Creatinine is solely filtered from the blood via the glomerulus and is not reabsorbed or secreted in the nephron, which is why it is a measurement that is a great indicator of kidney filtering ability. And if we have too much creatinine in the blood, we know that we have a kidney that's got a decreased functioning. Okay, so all of this leads us now into acute kidney injury and really what that is. And an acute kidney injury is the rapid loss of kidney function from renal cell damage. And it's resultant of cell hypoperfusion, cell death, and decompensation of the renal function. Now, this occurs abruptly and can be reversible. And it occurs abruptly because that's the name, you know, acute means abrupt, you know, sudden. So the prognosis when someone has an acute kidney injury depends on the cause and the condition of the client. But if it is caught early enough, it can be treated and reversed so that the kidney damage does not stay permanent. There are three types of reasons why people get an acute kidney injury. The first one is going to be a pre-renal cause, and that's where there is decreased blood flow to the kidneys. So in an example where someone has some sort of hemorrhage, or maybe they're hypovolemic, or they've got heart failure with really poor cardiac output that doesn't adequately perfuse the kidneys, we will see pre-renal damage. So it's something that is occurring before the kidney that damages it, versus intrinsic, or it's also called as intrarenal. So intrinsic is disease or some sort of problem within the kidney that is causing a problem. And that can be things like, you know, a stone or some sort of tubular necrosis. And then you have a post-renal cause that can precipitate the acute kidney injury. And this is normally where urinary outflow has some sort of obstruction that is preventing the urine from leading the kidney, and the urine backs up into the kidney and makes it big and puffy. And so that post-renal is a cause that is after the kidney itself that can lead to kidney damage. Now, each kidney has millions of nephrons that are responsible for filtering blood and reabsorbing nutrients, creating urine, etc., which is then voided out through the urethra. But when we have a pre-renal, an intrinsic, or a post-renal problem, we are doing damage to those nephrons that do that really important task of filtering, reabsorbing, and creating the urine. So if we talk about pre-renal AKI. Let's dive a little bit deeper into this. That pre-renal is outside the kidney and is causing some sort of intravascular volume depletion, like with blood loss, that can be associated with trauma or surgery, dehydration, things like that, decreased cardiac output, like with a cardiogenic shock, that is causing the problem. And it's an issue with perfusion to the kidney. And the lack of the perfusion to the kidney decreases the function of the kidney, which will, in all circumstances, eventually lead to an intrarenal injury because the kidney is not being perfused enough. So perfusion issues can decrease the function of the kidney. And as a result of that decreased blood to the kidney to filter, and the kidney is then deprived of those nutrients and isn't able to work as it should, we end up with a problem. When that intrarenal injury then occurs, it's because the nephrons, which were deprived of the adequate perfusion, which was pre-renal, they become injured and then they no longer work effectively at their job. But that's besides the point. When you think about a pre-renal acute kidney injury, the big issues that should come to mind are going to be some sort of perfusion issue to the kidney, which would be a cardiac issue. So if you've got a cardiogenic shock or a bad pump or heart failure with really poor cardiac output, we are not going to adequately perfuse the kidney. Or maybe it's not a pump problem, but we just don't have enough intravascular fluid volume to get to the kidney to adequately perfuse it to allow it to do its job. You'll see that in bleeding and dehydration. And then you also have burns. Individuals that suffer from significant burns often will end up with an acute kidney injury because the burns, if they're significant enough, ooze that exudate and that serous fluid that should be intravascularly. And then we end up with a hypovolemic status from effectively dehydration because we are losing that fluid volume and it is a decreased perfusion to the kidneys. Now, in your intrarenal acute kidney injury, right, it's damage to the nephrons inside the kidney. And when the nephrons, and again, remember, there's millions located in the kidneys. And a nephron can be divided really into two areas, depending on what it is that they're doing. You've got your renal corpuscle, which is the filtering structure, the glomerulus and the Bowman's capsule. And then you have the renal tubule, which is like that loop of Henle and the collecting tubule, the collecting ducts, where the water is removed and the electrolytes are managed. So if you have a problem with a nephron, your ability to filter the blood will then become decreased, which will lead to excess water buildup in the system, and it won't be able to maintain electrolyte levels where they need to be. Now, that intrarenal problem, right, decreases the ability for us to filter blood, remove waste, excess water, and maintain those electrolyte levels. The reasons or the causes behind why someone would have an intrarenal or an intrinsic acute kidney injury are going to be from things like nephrotoxic drugs. If someone is taking NSAIDs or antibiotics, specifically aminoglycosides, or they're on some sort of chemotherapy, or perhaps they've gone into the hospital.
Welcome to Fuller Butts, a behind-the-scenes plastic surgery podcast. Yes, you heard that right. Join your co-hosts, Dr. Sam Fuller and Dr. Dan Butts, board-certified plastic and reconstructive surgeons on an exclusive full-access pass into the world of plastic surgery. Combining their expertise and training, Drs. Fuller and Butts will share medical insights, detailed explanations, and lighthearted humor to keep you entertained and informed. We're certain you'll become passionate about the plastic surgery specialty, and between debunking myths, uncovering truths, or just making you laugh out loud at their perspective on this creative and artistic field, we've got something for everyone.
And they need imaging and they get contrast dye. A big place where this is filtered out is through the kidneys, but these drugs are nephrotoxic and in high quantities or prolonged exposure can damage the nephrons. It can also be caused from an infection like a glomerulonephritis or some sort of direct injury like a hit, you know, a kidney shot if someone got that in some sort of fight that they were in or an accident or if they had a stab. So those three big things can actually cause an intrarenal acute kidney injury. Drugs that are hard on the kidneys, infections, if left untreated especially, or if caught really late, that that infection led to glomerulonephritis, where the inside of the kidney basically is inflamed and angry. It's damaging those nephrons that need to be able to do their big job, or some sort of direct injury, versus your post-renal AKI, which is often the result of some sort of blockage that is preventing the urine from draining out of the system. And when this happens, it increases the pressure in the kidney with the water and the urine that is kind of backflowing. So an injury that happens after the kidney, or a blockage, for example, that is preventing the proper drainage, leads to that pressure buildup. And because that kidney can't drain and the waste is building up, it then decreases the whole renal function because the kidney is drowning in fluid. And because of that, right, we have a post-renal issue. And normally the big reasons why this will occur is either a renal calculi. So someone has a stone, and the stone can be anywhere from the ureters to the bladder to the urethra. If a blockage is created that prevents outflow, right, it places these people at risk for the development of a post-renal acute kidney injury. Or in those that were assigned male at birth, an enlarged prostate will prevent these individuals potentially from emptying their bladder fully. And when their bladder doesn't empty fully and that urine accumulates inside the bladder, it can then get so full that the urine is accumulating in the ureters, and then it backs up into the kidneys itself, causing a post-renal AKI. The other reason why people will get a post-renal AKI is from some sort of neurological injury, like a stroke or a spinal cord injury, where the patients then have the lack of bladder control or the lack of ability to feel bladder distension for patients who are self-cathing. So because of that neurological issue, they don't realize or they cannot feel that they need to empty their bladder. And we still, again, get the backup of fluid into the kidneys, increases the pressure and the water volumes in there, and decreases the ability for the kidney to do its job. Now, depending on what book you've read or who has taught you about acute kidney injuries, there are either three or four phases to an acute kidney injury. For me, I've always learned that there are four phases, because the first phase is the initiation phase, where it starts and that is the original cause of the kidney injury, and it ends, right, when signs and symptoms appear. So what this means is if you decide to go hiking, right, and you don't take any water with you and you go to a desert and you're hiking and you know you're becoming dehydrated, right, that's the initial phase where you may not have signs and symptoms yet of having an AKI, but you know that your fluid volume status is poor, so you have a pre-renal AKI brewing. So it's the initiation phase, which is the very first phase. And we often don't know that the patients are in this initial phase. And that's because when someone comes into the hospital, for example, and we know that they've been in some sort of car accident and they have had significant hemorrhage, we are already treating the potential for that AKI. So they don't have time to develop the signs and symptoms. They're already probably in it, but we, in the treatment of the problem that they have going on, have already started to address it. So the initiation phase starts from the initial cause of the injury and ends when signs and symptoms appear. And that can be a few hours or a few days before we start to see signs and symptoms of an acute kidney injury. The second phase is classified as the oliguric phase. And the oliguric phase, not every single person will go into it. Some patients actually skip this stage completely and jump right into diuresis. But for those that enter the oliguric phase, right, the oliguric phase is when the urine output is actually less than 400 milliliters a day. And it often lasts 1 to 2 weeks. And it's kind of a stage where if someone enters this stage, right, and it's an acute issue, we would normally temporarily treat them with like a quick variation of dialysis because the kidneys are not doing their job. So because the kidneys are not doing their job, so someone has sustained an acute kidney injury in the initial stage, and we don't catch it because they don't have signs and symptoms yet of it. But first stage is the initiation stage or the onset stage. The second phase of an acute kidney injury is the oligeric phase, and this is where the urine output is less than 400 milliliters a day. And this phase can last sometimes 1 to 2 weeks. Because of that, if you are only voiding 400 milliliters a day for 1 to 2 weeks, and we know that the average human typically voids anywhere between 1 to 2 liters, we are going to have fluid buildup. So the signs and symptoms of someone who's entered the oliguric phase are going to be an increase in BUN and creatinine. They might have neurological changes. They're likely to be hyperkalemic with a potassium level greater than like 5.1 milliequivalents per liter because there is decreased potassium excretion because we're not voiding that much and the kidney has been damaged, so it's not going to filter that out appropriately. And if we have hyperkalemia, we are likely to see EKG changes. We'll see a peaked T wave. Because we're only voiding 400 milliliters a day, these patients have increased fluid in their body. So they're likely to have edema. They might have pulmonary issues. The fluid has to go somewhere. They're also likely to be hypertensive because their body is dealing with increased fluid volume. They're also likely to be metabolically acidotic with a pH that is less than 7.35. And in some cases, they might be mildly hyponatremic. So in patients that have the oliguric phase, where they're not really voiding a whole lot because the glomerulus has a decreased ability to filter the blood, their BUN will be increased and their creatinine will be increased. And because of this, they might have some neurological changes because now we've got some waste buildup going on from the lack of the diuresis that the kidneys are doing. So as a nurse, we really want to watch their protein consumption because we know that they're not going to be able to appropriately filter that out. And we know that their potassium might be high because the kidneys aren't excreting it. So we want to watch for those cardiac issues because too much potassium is bad. And then they might have mild, but more often than not, normal hyponatremia because the blood is diluted from the extra fluid in the system. So the sodium could potentially run low. So from a nursing perspective, these patients, what we're going to do is give them a low protein diet and consider restricting potassium-based foods and really monitoring what those lab levels are doing. And then oftentimes they also get a fluid limit on what they can consume. And we need to have really strict I's and O's with them. So that means daily weights, monitoring their vital signs. What do their lungs sound like? Do they have swelling and edema? And monitor that respiratory status. The fluid has to go somewhere. Again, not everyone goes into the oliguric phase where there's not a whole lot of urine output. Some people will skip right over it. And when they skip right over it, they'll enter into the diuresis phase of an acute kidney injury. And this is where typically, like, there was some sort of initial injury. Remember, that initial phase occurs when the injury happens and ends when signs and symptoms develop. And basically, the diuresis phase is when the nephrons are on their way to recovery. Now, if you're thinking that doesn't even make sense because some patients skip the oliguric phase where they're not making enough urine because the nephrons are damaged. Well, similarly, in the initial phase, when the injury occurs, we don't see the signs and symptoms. But like I said, we are often, as healthcare providers, prophylactically treating these acute kidney injuries without our knowledge. And when that occurs, the nephrons then can be on their way to recovery. So first phase is the initial phase. Second phase is the oliguric phase where there's not a whole lot of urine output, 400 milliliters maybe a day, when we should be doing 1 to 2 liters. And then you hit the third phase, which is the diuresis phase. And that's when the nephrons are on their way to recovery. And it's filtering the blood, right? But because the nephrons are on their way to recovery and they're filtering the blood, they cannot concentrate the urine yet because they're still trying to recover themselves. So what we will see with these is that the nephrons are not 100%, but they're getting there. And so with that ability to filter the blood, they can start bringing down the waste levels that the BUN and the creatinine have kind of resulted in, but they cannot concentrate that urine. So we're not going to get an electrolyte balance and water levels will still be crazy in these patients. The glomerular filtration rate, the GFR, will improve, but will still be abnormal. okay, as the patient starts to become more alert and how they are improving, these patients, right, will start voiding 3 to 6 liters a day due to the osmotic diuresis. They have a lot of waste product in their system. And as such, when the kidneys try to filter that out, the water follows it. It cannot concentrate it yet. So electrolytes will all start to drop and the urine specific gravity will increase. It will become more diluted. So from a nursing perspective, right, now we're at risk, these patients are at risk for dehydration and hypotension and hypovolemia and hypokalemia because the kidneys are, they're filtering, but they don't care what they're filtering. They're not concentrating anything. So they're getting rid of everything. They're just voiding out excess levels and it's super diluted because they're not concentrating. So with that, as a nurse, some of the interventions that you're going to want to take are to monitor their neurological status. And you want to see that they're improving with their cognition. As the waste products leave their body, they should improve cognitively. They should be more alert and oriented to what is occurring and what's going on. Strict eyes and O's are still a key element here. We're still doing those daily weights, except now we're watching for dehydration because in the diuresis phase, it's exactly in its name. These patients are voiding 3 to 6 liters a day. We are then often going to provide order supplements to replace what is lost. So that's going to be in the realm of the different electrolytes that their kidneys are just getting rid of and not actually concentrating. And because the kidneys are not only getting rid of electrolytes, but also massive amounts of fluid, we will give these patients IV hydration in order to maintain their levels because now they are at risk for the development of some sort of dehydration from occurring. Now, once we get out of the diuresis phase, we enter the recovery phase, which is the last phase of an acute kidney injury. And the recovery is a really slow process. Sometimes a complete recovery may take 1 to 2 years if the injury to the kidney was significant enough. And this is where the GFR really returns to normal. And a normal GFR, or glomerular filtration rate, should be greater than 90 milliliters a minute. We will start to see an improvement and all of the signs and symptoms disappear. Urine output will return to the normal 1 to 2 liters a day. The BUN and the creatinine levels will return to a normal level. Electrolyte labs will go back to normal. And the length of, again, the length of the stage can be really, really long depending on what was the original cause. The older adult is less likely than a younger adult to regain full kidney function if they have sustained an injury that led them down this phase of oliguric diuretic recovery. So when we think about the different stages, right, and you think about 5 key elements, urine output, glomerular filtration rate, BUN and creatinine, so those labs, fluid volume, and electrolytes, basically, the only difference is that in the initiation phase, right, because there's 4 phases of an acute kidney injury, initiation, oliguric, diuresis, and recovery. What we see is in the initiation phase, it starts with an injury and ends when the first symptoms appear. And the first symptoms that we see are going to tell us if the patient is in either an oliguric or a diuresis phase, because not everyone goes into an oliguric phase for an acute kidney injury. From there, an oliguric phase, if we enter phase 2, oliguric, urine output is less than 400 milliliters a day. It's low, which means that their glomerular filtration rate is low. And all of the electrolytes and the waste products are high, including the urine-specific gravity, high. Versus the diuresis phase, which is where they are voiding out anywhere between 3 to 6 liters a day. And it means that the nephrons are now trying to return to normal and are just literally getting rid of everything, not concentrating a single thing. So that means our GFR is going to be increased and everything else is decreased. It's a paradoxical view between oliguric and diuresis. When one goes up, the other one is going to go down. So when our urine output in phase 2 of oliguria is really low, in diuresis, it's going to be really high, 3 to 6 liters a day. In phase 2 of oliguria, the GFR is decreased. Well, in diuresis, it's increased. And if in phase 2 with oliguria, everything, BUN, creatinine, fluid volume is increased, electrolytes increased, because we're not filtering anything out. In the diuresis phase, they're all decreased because we're getting rid of everything. And then the last phase is the recovery phase, where everything goes back to normal and we should return to a voiding status of 1 to 2 liters a day. So collectively, when you think about an acute kidney injury and nursing management, the assessment of these patients is going to revolve around what are their vital signs doing? What is their intake and output looking like? What is their general appearance? How does their mental status look? Their lung sounds, their heart rhythm. We're thinking about cardiac output and perfusion here, and what are those lab values doing? The interventions that we perform are going to be about monitoring and being really accurate in their intake and output. What are their daily weights? We are looking for signs and symptoms of hypervolemia or hypovolemia. We're assessing that potassium and that sodium, and we are using really careful caution with any sort of nephrotoxic drugs. So that is everything that I've got for an acute kidney injury and the 3 different phases, pre-renal, intrarenal, post-renal, and the 4 phases of initial, oliguric, diuretic, and recovery phase. If you like what you've heard today, or you have a specific topic that you'd like for me to consider covering, let me know, send it to me in a commentary. Make sure that you like the podcast on whatever platform you're listening to it in. And other than that, go forth and keep on learning.